today, what I want to show you is another approach, which would be the bottom-up analysis approach. And for this one, we would now change the our habits a bit and try to analyze not from the root symbol and try to expand all the rules until we reach the input, but instead have a look at the input itself and try to reconstruct right-hand sides of productions and try to assemble these subtrees into common larger subtrees until we reach a complete parsing tree. So that would be the program for today. First of all, one kind of motivation for going bottom-up instead of top-down is a certain phenomenon of grammars where we would focus on structures that arise whenever you have rules that, if you combine them in some way, would be able to reach the same symbol that we have started from if we just continually try to derive sentences from that. And if we get a pattern like this where we can derive from symbol A a sentence form which has this particular same symbol A at the very left of its string, then we would call a grammar left recursive. Well, already our simple example that we had so far is a grammar of that fashion. Here, and the E goes to E plus T, or in the T goes to T times F. We already have such a thing without even having to successively apply other rules. We can directly see that this thing is left recursive. What is the effect of such a thing in terms of top-down syntax analysis? Well, if we take that particular thing, well, that's... If we take a grammar which is left recursive, then we get a theorem that says that this grammar is not LLK for any k. Well, and the question, of course, is why is that? And for that, I would like to show you some kind of proof. So let us assume that we can at some point focus on the derivation like this, where we have very concentrated on just the sequence of derivations or that particular derivation if it's just one, where we actually hit the left recursive character of our grammar. So that would be the derivation chain where we reach A as the left part of a sentence form of a right-hand side. So that would be the typical situation. And also, of course, that only matters if the A is reachable from our root node at all. So A should also be reachable from S. Otherwise, well, we won't need to actually ever expand with this chain of derivations. So that's completely fine. So let's, for a moment, assume that G is indeed LLK. What does that mean? For that, we should probably take a look at the definition of what LLK actually means. And LLK means that you have to be able to differentiate between different derivations and their yields by just looking at the first k symbols of their input. So, for example, for the yield that is possible for this particular part here, Well, what would that be? Well, the recursion would at some point have to be terminated with the A with the alpha. So that is what's coming in front of each of these sentence forms. And we can recursively try to generate as many betas as we'd like by just recursively using these productions. And there might be some right context, which depends on the way that the A is actually reachable from the S. So that doesn't that's not sure what that actually is. Anyway, what's important is this part here. And for just nailing it down on a certain situation, let's have a look at the repetitions of this beta part, because that's the only thing that actually varies in this setting. If G would be LLK, what does it would mean that we would have to fix a K. You can choose it as large as you may want to, but we would have to use a constant fixed K, which we would then associate with that particular grammar. And with just that particular K, we would need to be able to differentiate between those two variations of yield. That means if you take a look at that from a point of view of a parse tree, the situation would look like this. You would have the start symbol S over here. At some point, we would reach the first A symbol, and from there, we would go an arbitrary number of times reproducing the A, and each time that we would hit the A in our sentence forms, we would, as a byproduct, generate some beta. And yeah, finally, when we reach this particular A, we somehow need to terminate our productions or our expansions, otherwise we will never reach the input. So at that point, the question is now, how do we terminate? Do we either expand with the alpha at that point, or might it be a good idea to once again slip in another recursion and only then terminate? And the thing is now, it actually doesn't matter how large I choose my K. By just pumping as many expansions of my alpha symbol here, I at some point will be able to exceed the number of input symbols that I might consider in order to disambiguate the situation here, because well, if I for example use k by 100 or so, and I have more than 100 repetitions of my expansions here, I will already run out of look ahead symbols from here, so such that I cannot realize that at some point this chain of betas will end. So if I just pump enough expansions of my A symbols in there, I won't be able to differentiate between those two alternatives anymore, and I cannot say anymore when to actually stop producing the A goes to A beta versions, or when I have to choose the A goes to alpha versions. I can make this also in a more formal way, like this, where we have two cases. For example, if I just have a look at the case where better actually is the empty string. In that case, well, in that case, this whole thing would be equal to alpha gamma, because the beta will be epsilon, same as here, alpha gamma. And in that case, well, I already have my overlap here. So there's the LLK condition is clearly not holding for case one. So for that, we already have a contradiction. Case two is a little bit more, more intriguing. Here we have that, that beta actually produces something which is not epsilon, which is this omega here. But in this case, consider if we assume that this k is fixed, we can just have a look at k many omegas in here and k plus 1 many omegas in the input. And for that situation, I already can't say anymore which expansion would be the right one to choose, because I only see the first k symbols of my input. And as omega is non-empty, it must be at least one symbol wide, and with that, my look-ahead window is already exceeded. So, yeah, in situations where I have this left recursion, I cannot use LLK parsing anymore. So, yeah, that is kind of the motivation for doing something more than LLK. There's concepts where you, instead of having a fixed number of input symbols as base of decision, you could, for example, also choose to decide depending on finite automaton or a regular expression, just giving you a kind of an unlimited size of look ahead. That is one technique to specify top-down parsers. But also the other idea would be not to to try to do this decision based on a fixed number of inputs, but instead defer this decision to a point where we actually have seen all the input that is relevant for that particular subtree. And that is the idea of another completely different parsing scheme, which would be the shift-reduced parser. That is now a bottom-to-top parsing principle parser. And the key thing, as we have already said, is to delay the decision on how expansions should look like until a point where we can have seen everything that is yielded by that particular by that particular part of the parse tree, and at that point we can then try to actually decide what we how we should expand that thing. And for that, we would try to start from very small. Just have a look at the input symbols at first, and then if we already see what we can do with the first few input symbols, we would already try to interpret them as a first subtree and continue with the next few input symbols, try to build another subtree, then at some point try to connect the subtrees to a larger subtree. And for that, we would go away like this. We would successively shift the input symbols, the terminals, onto the push down, and as soon as we see a complete right hand side of some production on the push down, we would remove them from the push down and replace them with the left hand side of that particular production, and continue with our algorithm. With that, we would piece by piece try to derive the root symbol from all the terminals that that we find on the input, and by that try to construct a reverse rightmost derivation of the tree. So, how does that look in practice? Let's have a look at a very simple example parser. So, that's the thing that you have already seen for the top-down parser. That's this very simple grammar. And a shift-reduced parser for that thing would look like this. We would have certain states or symbols that we can push on the push down. There will be a start symbol, there will be a final symbol. Then we would have the terminal symbols, because they need to be shifted at some point on the push down. And then we would work with these symbols. We would try to remove them and replace them with the left-hand side of according productions. So we also need to store left-hand sides of productions on there. So we also need to store non-terminals on there. So that's also usable symbols for states or on the pushdown. Well, we have already said we would have one start state and one end state. The transition table of such a shift-reduced parser would look like, well, what would it look like? We would construct it in a way that, well, if we have a start state and A in the input, we would shift the input on top of the stack. We have a rule with A on the right-hand side, so we will want to rewrite that to the non-terminal large A. So in case that we find an A on the stack, we wouldn't consume any input, but instead replace the A with a large A. In case we have a large A on there, and we have in the input a B, we will once again shift, so the new top of stack would look like that. In case that we find a B on the stack, we wouldn't consume anything, but instead we would replace it with a B because we have a rule that says so. If we find a B on the stack, well, that is just another right-hand side of a production. In that case, we also would like to replace this thing with its left-hand side, which would be the S. And in case we only have the S on the push down and the start symbol, we will have succeeded with detecting AB in the input, and we can replace that thing with just the final state. So that would be a simple shift-reduce parser for that particular grammar. So if we do that in a more formal way, we can find general ways to create a shift-reduced parser. For that, we will need, well, the terminals and non-terminals as our states, together with two artificial symbols for start and end of the input. Well, the start symbol and the end symbol. The end symbol is in the final states. And then we have certain rules how to create transitions for the shift-reduced parser. Well, what are these? Well, for once, there's the one special rule which would make our parser accept. That would be the one where the Q0, the start state, has only an S at the top. S is the start symbol of the grammar. And in that case, we would rewrite the whole thing into just having F on the pushdown. In case that there's no input anymore, that would be the accepting state of the pushdown automaton. Then there's another transition, which is the shift transition, we already talked about that. Shift transitions would be the ones that would shift the terminal symbol from the input on the push down in order to then work with them. So how would that work? We would have on top of the stack some arbitrary state. We don't care about what that looks like. Then we would have an input symbol X, and we would end up with a new pushdown content where we would have the old top of stack, and on top of that would be the terminal from the input. So that's shift transitions. Bang, that easy. Then there's reduce transitions, that these look like that. And there, we actually don't care what the input looks like. We don't consume it. We don't do anything with that. Instead, what we look at is the content of the pushdown, especially the top of the pushdown. And in case that we find that some right-hand side of a production of our grammar matches the content of our top of stack, then we would rewrite, and we would rewrite in a certain way. Namely, we would take the according left-hand side of the production that matched its right-hand side to the top of the stack, and put that instead of its right-hand side on top of the stack, while keeping everything that was below. Applied to our example. Let's have a look at how a computation actually looks like. So we would start with the initial state and the valid input. Well, our grammar was always just generating AB, so let's try that as our input. First of all, we have this shift transitions where we would perform, well, we would just move the first symbol that we find on top of the push down, which would lead to this configuration where we have A on the push down, and also for configurations we have the rest of the input, so the B stays there. Now there's a reduced transition where we say A will be reduced to large A, so we just modify the push down and keep the input as it is. What's sensible to do next? Well, we have to shift B in order to work with that, so we modify the push down accordingly and have successfully emptied the input. Now we have the reduce transition, which would reduce the right-hand side of the production B goes to B to the large B, so like this. Input still stays empty and will do so for the rest of all the other configurations. Then we match that as a right-hand side of the root production, like this. And that is now our special finalization transition, which would introduce the final state on the push down, and we have an empty push down together with the final state, and that means we accept that thing. Fine. That was easy. Well, apart from just the question, why did we actually why did we actually reduce here, but we could also have shifted the B to the input? Our transitions just don't say. We can do either. So hidden in this concept here is still a bit that doesn't tell us everything. There's still non-determinism in there. In our case, with our knowledge, we can already say, well, as soon as we match something, some right-hand side on the push-down, we will just perform a reduce. And in case that a reduce doesn't work, only then we should shift. That might help for that particular grammar, but that's not something that you can do for all of the grammars. So, a few of the these observations, also written down for you at home to read. So that is the core thing. The shift-reduce push-down automaton per se is also something non-deterministic. We've already talked about what we do is an actual reverse rightmost derivation. And in case that we are interested in correctness of what we do, well, the way to prove this construction correct would be we would have to associate the derivation of symbols with these bottom-up reconstruction steps of our shift-reduce parser, and would have to deconstruct that structurally, and with that we would in the end succeed in proving correctness. However, that's a lot to do, and we are already running out of time, so we will leave that away, but that would be the way to go for. In order to make something useful out of that non-deterministic concept, we need to work a little bit more, and the way to go for would be this one. We would want to somehow identify those computation states where we would want to reduce instead of shift. And that is now the core concept that we call LR parsing. Let's have a look at how this bottom-up parsing actually works by visualizing that in a parse tree. Also, we will then see that this will be actually reverse rightmost derivations we get. But yeah, for example, for the input counter is a variable name times 2 plus 40. We will start with a push down like that. And first thing would be that we would shift the first symbol to the push down terminal to push down. This would be like that. And this would then be reduced to F. You see this is collapsed in that drawing. That would be further reduced to T. Then we would at some point shift the times operator and the int operator before we once again start to reduce. Then with T times F, we can reduce to T. Let's go further, reduce that to E. Then we shift the next symbol into the input, next symbol to the input. Then we reduce again and reduce again, and in the end have this E, which can then be the start symbol special rule and be replaced with F. So that would be how a parse tree for the arithmetic expressions would be run through with a shift-reduce parser. If you think back on when we talked about derivations, that is exactly what the reverse rightmost derivation was when we had that. So that is just for you to see. The other thing is, well, during the whole thing, we had situations where we had to decide certain things. For example, we had these situations where we actually wanted to reduce at some point, and these situations were the ones that we want to create means for detecting. We want to actually know when to when to reduce and when to instead shift. So the way how to do that would be to have a closer look at this intermediate state in reconstructing the reverse rightmost derivations of that shift-reduced parser. Meaning, for example, this specific situation. That is immediately the situation before we perform a reduce. For such a reduce to happen, the parse tree needs to look like a specific shape. The gray things are gone, so to say, so these things don't matter. These are already collapsed. So the parse tree, or that the thing that remains from the parse tree, is still these things. There must be a path from the root symbol that reaches, in the end, a complete right-hand side, and not an arbitrary right-hand side, but a right-hand side that lies directly above this, or is part of a certain subtree that matches how a production looks like, and also this symbol must be reachable from the root node. So the thing would be that we would need to somehow have a look at what is on the stack, because that's the only thing that we can read during runtime of our shift reduced parser, and somehow relate that with reachability from our root node. Also, there's other situations. For example, this one here. Here we also did a reduce from F to T. However, we did not use the complete content of the push dump, but just the topmost thing. However, still we can the thing to be would be to read all these parts from the stack, which is this E plus F. That would be on the stack in that situation, and also this E must be reachable from the root symbol. So we must track this path through this fraction of the parse tree. That looks a little bit difficult to spot at first, but of course there's two parts to that. The parts like this one, and well, let's move away. This edge over here and this edge over here are things that that correspond to the expansions that we've seen in top-down parsing. When you think back, we can expand the E to, for example, the E plus T. So there was an expansion going on there. And here, for that part, there's also an expansion for that. There's an expansion T goes to F. So the things that navigate from one level to the other are actually these expansions. Then there's also connections like this. These are, well, on one level, so to say, of the parse tree. And there's no expansions involved in that, but it's just, these originate from just sequences of symbols on right-hand sides of productions. There is a right-hand side of a production that actually says E plus T. So these are the sources for transitions in these paths here. And all of those things are based on rules of productions. So yeah, maybe not now. The thing would now be, we would like to find a way to construct an automaton that uses the rules of our grammar as sources for its transitions, which would try to do these expansions and also these transitions due to the sequence of the symbols of right hand sides. And for that we would maybe start with an example first and then with a general way how to do that. We have the example grammar from before. We have expansions over given like this. Well, not like this. Expansions given by this arrow here, and the sequences as the right hand sides of productions. And we would differentiate between considering the particular sequence, the structure of this of the sequence of a right hand side by, for example, this one here. We would track where we would consider that particular item as being still expandable and where not. So here, for the production E goes to E plus T, we would start with the E is still expandable and then move the marker over here where we would say, well, at that point we would expect a plus symbol in the input. Then we would go to the next symbol in the sequence where we would say T is now expandable. Then go to the next item where we would say, well, we have already expanded everything and consider this right-hand side as completed. So that would be the way to track the horizontal movements in the parse tree that we had before. That is all the different states that that help in reading these horizontal movements in the parse tree, and then there's also these expansions that might happen. For example, there's an expansion that might happen between this specific state where we have the marker in front of an E. We could expand, for example, to that specific state or even this one, because all of these are expansions of E. One goes to the right-hand side with E plus T and the other one goes to the right-hand side of T. And if we draw the complete transitions, we will get a lot of connections in there, which would all relate to, well, we have a marker in front of a non-terminal, and thus we can still expand that particular thing and then have to continue one level below, where we then have to deal with a different right-hand side. So, for example, in our case where we wanted to have this, this E goes to E, and then it was, I think, another E plus T, and then it was an F or something. That was the trace in the or the path in the parsing tree that we wanted to trace. So for that, we would have to first go an E transition like this. This would be this one. Then there would be another E transition. This would be this one, for example. Then we would, is it this one? Yeah, then we would go over here and passing this E. This would be that edge over here. Then we would pass a plus, which would be this one here. And then we would reach a T, which would then have to be expanded to reach the next level. So with that, we would expand the T to either of those. Well, we know that there's just an F over there, so we will go with this one. And here we have another right-hand side where we can just have the F, which is this thing. And we would reach a final state, which would tell us we have reached a point where we it is admissible to reduce with this particular production. So you see, the idea is here to use the principles of top-down parsing to construct an automaton that tells a bottom-up parser whether the current computation state is admissible for reducing or not. And we can do so by just reading these horizontal things from the actual push down of the automaton. So we can go back there. The idea would be I put a level more in there in my example, but yeah, it would boil down to the same thing. We would read that thing, and with just that, we would in the end reach that particular final state, and then we would know that by looking into that final state, we would see that it was the production T goes to F, and with that, we can then decide we want to reduce, and we want to reduce specifically with this T goes to F. So that is now the helper construction that we need. The general idea is what we want to do is we want to construct this particular automaton that associates with its states sets of items where these productions with the marker in there that are admissible for a certain alpha sentence form, which can be found on the internal pushdown, and this internal pushdown came to be by just the history of what has already been removed from the input and matched with certain right-hand sides of rules. You notice here on that part of the tree is already consumed and reduced all the way up there, and the only remains of these things are now these sequences of symbols of non-terminals in general, alpha 1, alpha 2, alpha m, and gamma, and those couldn't be completed yet because there was still parts of these subtrees missing, because there's still things to the right that haven't been matched with input yet. So that's the thing that's residing on the push down. And what we want to do is we want to for this string that we take from the push down, we want to compute the set of items that characterize what decisions I should perform at that point, how I consider this situation, whether it is something that comes from one production only, or whether there's still multiple productions that I can apply here at that point. And the way to come to this automaton is the one that I've sketched you already on the next slide. We have seen that already, but there's only two principles going on in there. We have, first of all, we have items as the states of our automaton. Items means set of grammar rules, which where each of them has a marker in there. The start state is a singular set; it has only one item in there, and this that particular artificially introduced production S prime goes to whatever we have chosen as our root symbol S, and we have final states, And these final states are the ones that that flag a certain rule as the one to be applied in the reduction of the LR parser. And yeah, then there's the transitions, the ones where we consume inputs from the pushdown are these, where we have a an item as state of origin, where the marker is in front of a specific symbol. Then we would generate a transition under that symbol to another state where the marker is shifted by one. And it doesn't matter whether that symbol is a terminal or non-terminal, for we might have both of them in on the pushdown. So, well, we have to live with both of them by in the characteristic automaton. And whenever we have one of them in the rule, we have to add such a shift transition to our characteristic automaton. These are the one the transitions that go on the same level of the parse tree. Then there's the second type of transitions here. These are the ones where I change levels of or switch levels of my parse tree. These are the ones that are added whenever I have my marker in front, not of an arbitrary symbol, but in front of a non-terminal. And in that case, I would do a non-deterministic transition without consuming any symbol of the pushdown, and go over to a state where I have a fresh fresh production for the symbol that my marker has been in front of. So that's this B over here, and yeah, for each of the right hand sides that are produced by B, I add such a transition here, and that gives us the this automaton that we have seen here. That is the one that we can use to read the pushdown and to determine the rule with which the shift reduce parser actually needs to be reduced, reducing. So with that we can do, well, that was a finite automaton, so we can do our usual transformations. We would perform power set construction and remove all the epsilon transitions in there. Well, depending on the way that you have learned how power set construction works, you might do that even in one step, but the one that I've introduced here was emanating from the Barisethi approach, I think, and there we didn't have any epsilon transitions. So to be sure that everyone gets what I mean, I add this step in here. But well, maybe your power set construction that you remember already featured that these epsilon transitions, then you can skip that thing. Anyway, what you get out of that is the deterministic automaton, which is this thing over here. And that is now the automaton that is applied after each shift or after each step that the shift reduce parser does on the pushdown. And as soon as you have read the complete pushdown with that automaton, you just check whether you are in a finite state or not. If you're in a finite state, for example, this one, then what you would do is you would then reduce. And I've removed the sets of items from all the states in here, but well, this this thing would probably tell you to reduce with E plus T, which would be another E probably, but so that would be the action to do. In case you hit something else like this one, which is not a finite state, then well, there's probably no or there's for sure no production that would be applicable for that particular parsing state, and you would instead shift another input symbol. So this canonical LR0 automaton is, well, if you have to do this power set construction and all that, that is a lot of steps in there. If you want to be a little bit faster, you can do that with another construction that we can do over here together. You can also directly construct that canonical LR0 automaton. And that would probably work something like this. We have, at first, the state S prime goes to E, which is the start state of that canonical LR0 automaton. So the thing is, here now we want to have a direct construction without having to perform this power set construction in between. So in case that we have the marker in front of a non-terminal, we would have to expand the dependent productions also. So for that, for example, we would have to expand also E and integrate that into our start state. So for E, we have, for example, this production. So we would have to add E goes to E plus T. Then for E, we also have T as just right-hand side. So we would go like this. And then we check whether we are already done with all this, the items that go into that thing. Well, there's still one missing, because the T can also be expanded if the bullet is in front of the T. So we have to check this one. T goes to T times F. And also this one. T goes to F. And yeah, once again, we have the mark in front of a non-terminal, so we also have to take this one in our state. So we have this one in there, and also this one goes to int. So then let's verify whether we have gotten everything. E. For E, we have all these two. Fine. Then we have T in those two. For T, we have introduced both of the variants over here. Very well. Then we have F. For F, we'll have all those. Okay. So that is the content of the first state of the canonical automaton. So that would be Q0. Q0. So, question.
Shouldn't there be a dot before E in the last line?
Yeah, also in front of int. It just have to draw it very hard to get it to like that.
Is it before E or before the brace?
Before the bracket. Yeah, because the bracket is already a symbol that I can shift further on. So the next state for the canonical automaton, we can get the next state by shifting this, which means that I can go a transition with a symbol as label, and I can do that with, for example, non-terminals like E. And for that, I would now check all the items in there that actually have the mark in front of an E, because for those, I can actually perform the shift. For example, this one here would look like that. Then we would have the mark in front of E here too. So this would be like this. And there's no other. Okay, so that would be the state for shifting Q0 with an E. Let's call that Q1. Then we might also shift, for example, the bracket. And bracket is only here, so this will lead to F goes to like that, E. And now we have to pay attention, because the marker is in front of a non-terminal once again. So for that, we have to once again expand E, which goes to E plus T. E goes to T. This has another T, and so on. So that entails a lot of the other expansions that we've done over here. So that would be another state. So that is what I have kind of pre-computed for you already. So you see that was the one that we have already seen as Q0. Then we had the one with E, which would give us this one. Well, I didn't do the bracket one on that page, but there's other pages. But you see, that is the general concept in there. You perform a closure operator where you do all the epsilon transitions that are possible in the automaton by just checking for the occurrence of the marker in front of a non-terminal, and then adding all the productions for that particular non-terminal to the thing with the marker on the very left-hand side, and do that recursively until you have reached a stable set of items. If you're done with that, you complete this state and do all the possible transitions on that by looking at what symbols the marker's actually standing in front of, and then you perform all the transitions for all the symbols that are preceded by the marker, and perform the same construction principles to get production symbols. First of all, you choose those items from the old state where the marker is in front of the particular symbol with which you do the transition, and move the symbol one to the right in order to obtain the new items, and then once again pay attention to whether there may be expansions, and perform the transitive closure of expansions in there. If you do so, you will reach a lot of other states. You see, that was the other one that we have tried to do, and yeah, that was the one that came to us naturally, and then we discovered that there's an E with a marker preceding, so we had to generate the E's. From there, we had to generate the T's. From there, we had to generate the F, and then we would reach a stable set. And yeah, the Q5 is then also at some point the base for transitions, for example, this one, and so on. So in this case we generated two pages of states, and yeah, that's actually it. So that would be the paper construction without any power set construction involved. It's just performing the expansions and ordinary transitions by shifting the bullet to the right. So that would be the algorithm to generate the canonical LR0 automaton without all these graphical intermediate parts. That also turns out to be the fastest way to generate these things on paper. So that might be the way to go for if you expect something like that in an exam. Yeah, so for that automaton construction, how what do you do formally? You have as states sets of items. The start state is based on this artificial S prime goes to S with a marker in front of S. And then, don't forget, do an epsilon closure. What is an epsilon closure? That is the epsilon transitions in the characteristic automaton. And that is what we have done with that. Well, in case that we have found the marker in front of a non-terminal in items that we already have in our originary set, we also take everything that is derivable from that into our set and continue recursively. That is our closure. We've done that on the construction example before. So that is the epsilon closure. Transitions, how do transitions look like? Transitions of that automaton emanate from already existing states, always under symbols. In case that there is a marker in front of such a symbol in one of the state's items, and in case you have found such a thing, the new state will contain that particular item with the marker shifted one to the right, together with all the other items for which that is applicable. And then, once again, epsilon closure, meaning if my marker has reached another non-terminal, expand all these things recursively. That's what we have done. And yeah. So that's the transitions. And for an automaton construction, what misses in the end is, never forget, you have to mark final states. When is a state a final state in that construction? Well, in case that we have an item where the marker is on the right-hand side, which you call the complete item, then we mark that particular state as final state. That's important because these are the ones that flag that we should reduce. Okay, so that is the formal construction for the canonical automaton. Now we have all the components that we need for an LR0 parser. First of all, we have the shift-reduce automaton. That is a pushdown automaton. The pushdown automaton does only simple things like shifting or reducing. It shifts from the input to the pushdown, and it reduces on the pushdown. It doesn't know when to actually reduce and when to shift. For that, it needs a helper construction. The helper construction is a finite automaton running on the pushdown of the pushdown automaton. So with a canonical automaton, you can give hints to the shift-reduce automaton when to actually perform shifts and when to perform reduces. So with those two components in place, we can now assemble an LR0 parser, which would be there for use. And there's a few technical notes. For example, so far we have lived with the concept of putting the actual input symbols and intermediate non-terminal symbols onto the pushdown and rerun the canonical automaton on particularly that pushdown content each time that any decision needed to be taken. You can do that. That would be correct. But nonetheless, you have to reread the pushdown each time you want to do anything with a LR with a shift reduce parser. That's okay, but that also costs performance. What can you do against it? Well, if you consider what you're actually doing on the pushdown afterwards, you only manipulate the top of the pushdown, but potentially not everything on there. So you reread a lot of the same things all the time when you run your shift reduce parser. So the idea would be: can't I somehow cache my states that I reach by reading the pushdown, such that I don't have to reread everything all the time? And the idea is, the result is yes, I can do so, and by doing so, I can even get rid of my original pushdown. I would just instead use another stack. And what I do on the stack is I would push all the states that I have reached in the run of my pushdown automaton so far, whenever I consume another input symbol, and in case that I reach a reduce or a final state in my canonical automaton, I would remove all the states. The number of states that the right-hand side of the rule with which I reduce correspond to, and continue with one level further up in the parse tree, with performing the another branch in my canonical automaton. So. That, I think, is it? No, it's not here. Yeah.
I don't really get the difference why we replace the by states. We try to match this expression, saying, okay, this is too expensive. We better want to match against some set of states that we have locked through. Or
the thing is, maybe let's navigate back to where we have such a thing. Over here, when I have, for example, no, that was the wrong tool. Int plus int over here. I could move, first of all, the int on the stack. No. Int on there. Then I would have to run this whole thing. I would read int and say, reduce to, I think it was it F? I think so. It would reduce the int with F. Then I would rerun everything. F goes to a final state. I would reduce that to, was it T? I think it was T. I would rerun that. I go over here like that. I would reach this thing that which would say replace that with E. Is it E? I think so, yeah. I would run it over here, and yeah, let's ignore that we reach a final point here. In the end, what we would do is we would add another input symbol. I know it says final state, but let's move that away for now, because that's still not a deterministic thing here. We still have to do something. But yeah, anyway, like that. And that would be the way that the thing would work with symbols on the stack. But you see, the other thing to be was that we were going through this whole automaton several times, always starting with zero. And we could then read int, consume it from the input, not putting it on the stack instead, but instead we would go to 4. 4 is a final state. I was matching with the right-hand side of size 1. I would remove the 4 and restart from the stored state over here. And now in this case, I would be able to, for example, then read plus over here. No, not plus, sorry. Instead of int, I would then all the, have to replace this 4 with the thing that was on the right-hand side of that of the production. I think it was the f, wasn't it? Yeah, it was f goes to int. So I would go in the automaton 0 f, which would lead me to 3. 3 is also a final state. I would try to remove that and instead go with the left-hand side of F, which was T. I think so, T. T is the... Which one is it? T is this one here, so it goes to 2 and so on. So I can also just put the states on the push down. So far that's okay, isn't it?
It's okay.
Where the actual advantage comes from is in case that I have passed that part, which is kind of an open left side of a production, which leaves over here a kind of a a stockpile of non-consumable states. And I would instead have to, for example, here I would be able to, from that thing, yeah. For example, here when I have parsed through that state here, I would have on the stack I would have something like 0, 1, and 6. And here I would have processed this thing and this thing already, so I still have to process int. At that point, I will reach the 4, and I can, this is the final state, I have to remove it, and instead of what I do is, I will, the int is actually a f. So I will, instead of going int, I will go f directly. So I will replace the 4 with a 3 without considering this part of the stack. So that remains without any influence on the thing. And I just based the thing on the state, which is then on top, which was the 6. So the thing is that I act just with only the topmost stack in mind, instead of all the time running through the whole stockpile of assembled symbols. That actually plays a role as soon as our parse trees start getting larger, because I would have to read through a lot of these symbols that are yet not completed, but still play a part in the history of what I have read so far in my input. Convinced yet? Yeah, it's actually just a matter of how large the pushdown content actually is. So in grammars where I have a lot of deeply nested productions for my parse tree on the pushdown, this actually makes a difference whether I run my automaton all the time on the complete pushdown or whether I can decide just on the topmost, looking at the topmost state, what I have to do next. It's an optimization. It doesn't change anything on the expressivity or so. market. Yeah. So I think that one comes more intuitively when you have seen a few pushdowns of shift reduce parsers actually working or in action, especially if you have, for example, so recursive productions for lists of arguments of functions, for example. If you want to parse them, you build up a lot of symbols on the pushdown. For each of the list elements, you put another symbol on there. And with that, as soon as you want to parse the next input symbol, you have to run through the complete list of former parameter things over and over again for each new item. That's actually important because the complete parser is actually a linear thing. It's a linear algorithm. So you don't want to reread your input lists, for example. If it wouldn't be a linear algorithm, it wouldn't matter. Good. Okay. I've already mentioned that the parser is the parser is not deterministic per se, but it is. It can be deterministic. For most of the times, it was, but we have already seen that it was not for a specific situation, and we can pinpoint the situations where the canonical automaton is not able to give sufficient advice to the shift-reduce parser. Namely, look at these states here. We have matched the criterion for final state with these items here, but all the same, there's still other items in there. So the canonical automaton is not sure which of the production is actually at the moment still. It says both of them would be admissible with the knowledge that I had so far. So if I end up in state Q1, for example, we could either reduce based on S prime goes to E, or we could also be still not finished because there might be another plus symbol on the input, and in that case, I would have to shift. So it's possible that the canonical automaton still isn't sure what to do. One of the examples was the one that we have seen while we were trying to trace our way through this automaton in the example where I said there was a reduce, a final state, but still not the one that would actually have to be chosen. Yeah, that's exactly such a situation. It was that state over here where we could either reduce with E and end up with the final state and ignore the rest of the arithmetic expression, or where we still had to read something from the input. That was this one. So that is still non-deterministic, and that's a bad thing. We call this thing a shift-reduce conflict in case that the state of the canonical automaton says, well, you can either reduce or shift, I don't know. Or even a reduce-reduce conflict where the canonical automaton state says, well, I wanted to reduce, but I can't say which of the productions is actually the one that you should reduce with. So there's a potential for conflicts in there. And if we encounter canonical automatons with such states, we call the according grammar as not suited for LR0 parsing. You notice suddenly we have a number appearing in the name of the parsing scheme. We had such a thing also for the for the LL parser, and that was a strong hint for, well, we can do something about our current knowledge of our parser by taking something like look ahead into account. And so far, we didn't actually have a look into the future. We just consumed input and was gone afterwards. But still, at that point, we could also try to decide based on input symbols that actually are successors of the things that we have consumed so far. And we can have a look into the future of our input. And that is that turns out to be a quite a successful way of dealing with these ambiguous situations. For example, at that particular position, there I might also have, well, here for example, I have a T on the push down, and I have to decide whether to shift something in order to go for T goes to T times F, or to go instead for an E goes to T. Both of them would be viable and reachable things from the input. You can go E, E1 and directly T, or you might go through the way E0, E1, T0, T1. So both of them would be somehow reachable. We have to determine some other criterion of how to decide what to reduce with. And as we have already had indicated, look ahead would be the way to do that. We could have a look at the next input symbol and decide by that, because, well, if you in our case, it's pretty clear if we have a time symbol over here, multiplications operator, then we will definitely choose this way of completing our reduction and not go directly to this thing, at least in case that E is not able to exist with the right context of times. But that is something, that's a property that we can pre-compute by looking at the rules of our grammar. So, yeah, at that point, for example, was the that was the complete other decision here. It's just to show you that the other thing would also be applicable in practice. So you could also want to reduce to E from T, but that would depend on another symbol coming to the right of what I've seen so far. So if I have a plus in the input, I would probably want to reduce to E instead of T. But how do I pre-compute that? Well, that depends on the places where my where my actual right-hand side in question, or and the particular look-ahead symbol actually can be found in my grammar. So, for example, here the symbol T and the multiplication operator only coincide next to each other within the right-hand side of that particular production over here. So that would be a strong hint for whenever I have a T and I am tempted to reduce this T to E, I should not do so in case that multiplication operator is the next thing in the input, because that particular situation only happens whenever I still have to shift another int and f, for example, to complete my T production. Yes?
What if we reduce T to E and then there is also a production rule with E and star on the right-hand side?
So, you mean something like T and I would reduce that to E.
Yeah, now I'm just assuming that there's another production rule with E and the star on the right-hand side. So that is also valid.
If that would be valid, then the star alone would be not enough as criterion to decide, and I would have to consider more symbols. So I have to enlarge my look ahead. But having such situations in practice is already close to ambiguous grammars. So that is difficult to get where you don't specify an ambiguous grammar. So, but yeah, the other situation where with the plus was not so easy to see anymore, because there's no right-hand side where there's a plus next to a T at all. But that's due to the situation that T is actually to the right of a right-hand side, and nothing follows anymore. So there's T is already the last symbol of its right-hand side. So it doesn't even depend on whether there is another symbol, but it also depends on all the places that E can get expanded from. So I have to look at, well, T was expanded from E, so I need to check all the places where E actually resides. And turns out E has, for example, a plus on the right-hand side. So in case that the T was expanded from an E, I will find a plus next to it. So finding a plus next to a T means that I should reduce with E goes to T. So choosing this thing here. Okay, so that is the basic idea. So what I have to do is I have to incorporate look ahead into my automaton construction also, but I think we're already at the end of our session today, so I will defer that to next time. But I hope you got the general idea of incorporating look ahead into the canonical automaton, how the whole thing is actually constructed. We will see next time. It's pretty similar to what the LR0 automaton construction actually is, so please try to prepare the LR0 construction, especially the formal one, where we just do the whole thing on paper with a closure directly applied to your start items. And next time we'll do an extension to that, which will also feature the look ahead of the canonical automaton. Okay, that's everything for today.
There's will there be a tutorial this week?
I think so, yes.
There's no homework sheet, so the internet
so far. I think it's still the last one should apply, shouldn't it? Did you already do the last time? I think it's from 2 weeks ago or something. So, yeah, there's been a lot of bank holidays and replacement fill-in lecture and all that.